The Earth has ended before. Not in the bad B-movie sort of sense, but in the actual, like, almost everything died kind of sense. 5 times in the last 500 million years, to be exact, life on this planet has been reset. The Permian extinction wiped out over 90% of species. The Cretaceous event ended the reign of the dinosaurs. And now, we're living through number 6. Except this one's different. It's not caused by an asteroid or volcanoes or microscopic organisms. It's caused by us. But buried in those ancient endings are also lessons. Stories about survival, adaptation, and the strange, beautiful creatures that made it through. My guest today is JP. Online, you might know him as Paleo Author, and they're writing a book called Primordial, a biology of ancient triumph and tragedies. It's part science, part stories, part love letter to the deep past. Today, we talk about mass extinctions, dinosaur coolness, the weirdest animals you've never heard of. Obviously, Jurassic Park is going to come up quite a bit, and maybe most importantly, why the past matters now more than ever. But before we dive in, I want to give a huge shout out to the folks who make this show possible. My patrons over at patreon.com/thewildlife. You keep the lights on, the mic running, and the questions flowing. So thank you, Christy G, Alicia Lawrence, Melissa Keneally, Steph Southard, Meg Minland, Dave, Kathy Cooksey, Kate Lampe, Carissa Robinson, Carrie, Sarah, and Mitchell, and Kara Bergman. Okay, let's meet JP. Where did Primordial begin for you?
Well, the journey to write that began around, like, I think nearing the end of COVID, so like 2021, mm-hmm. when I wanted to write an informational book about dinosaurs. Later on, the project went sort of downhill as life rolled out. And eventually, after I wrote my first published book, Sauria, a prehistoric anthology, I began thinking, what if I wrote a nature documentary almost? So I remember it was a cloudy evening on November 1st, 2023, when I started to write Primordial. At the time, it was called Primordial, a zoology of ancient dynasties. But over time, the name evolved to become Primordial, a biology of ancient triumphs and tragedies.
Which is an absolutely fantastic title, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Anytime you can have a good, not just, you know, single word title, but like a solid tagline in there too, you know?
Yeah,
that's beautifully done. So
thank you.
Background, I mean, I take it dinosaurs have been a long-term interest. I mean, have you kind of always been into dinosaurs? Were you more interested in other things? A rock kid, science, art kid, what?
I've always been obsessed with animals. I think that obsession started when my mom bought me this like book or toy set or something of like barn animals. And then I don't exactly remember how, but eventually I was just like, oh wait, these are like super animals. And then boom, like after that, dinosaurs became my main thing. Obviously other things were added on over time, like dragons, giant Godzilla monsters, and obviously extant living animals, which are still marvelous and spectacular in their own way. But yeah, it was mostly just the fact that dinosaurs were so weird, but so awesome that I could not get over them no matter how many times like people told me that it's not cool or that it's not fun or whatever. I was just like, whatever, you're lost.
Yeah, honestly, people are missing out. I think it's sad that at a certain point in life, you know, people stop asking, you know, what's your favorite dinosaur?
And oh, man.
Some of the coolest people I know. I have a friend who we were in high school together and then kind of lost touch for a long time. Didn't expect it in a million years, but she has since gone on to become a paleontologist. And every time I'm like looking around, like there's just some new publication she comes out with. And I'm always just like, you know, sending her messages. I'll see it like on CNN or New York Times or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, Tiffany, this is the coolest thing ever. So
that is so awesome. You're
a good company.
Man.
So was there a specific moment or realization that made you feel like this book was necessary? Maybe in other books that you're reading, something that felt like it was missing that you felt like you could fill that void?
Yeah. I think I've always, like, there were two moments that really became primordial soul. One was this video by, like, a science communication channel called Coursesat. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And they kept harping on about how there's only so much that we know about the past, but also there's so much that we don't even know that we don't know. So I was like, what is there that we don't know about? And to add on to that, there was a video by, he's an animator slash heavy metal artist, Dane Pavitt. He's a paleontologist, and he made this video about how we perceive animal populations and what we see as like a population boom versus what is historically a population boom.
Yeah.
And he pointed out how, like, the thing is, we might not be allowing nature to recover from like the extinction at the end of the last ice age. And there was a line in specific, will future life ever get to be big again? And I was like, oh my God. And then obviously, as I grew older, I started hearing more and more about how, long story short, we are causing and living through the sixth mass extinction in Earth's history. And I was just like, people need to learn how to combat it, and also how we got there, because you won't protect what you don't love. So for me, the best way to learn was through a story. Like, whenever I was in a math class and they would always turn a page to like something cool, I'd be like, okay, now I'm paying attention. So it was just a thing of like, how can I make this fun? And then, so from there, Primordial was born, honestly, out of boredom on that one afternoon, but later on it became like basically one of the big things for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're so right on that. Storytelling. I try to talk to people about this all the time. Like, storytelling is like the most human thing that we can do, you know, and in terms of, you know, making any kind of change or getting people to care about something or adopt, you know, some kind of idea or identity or whatever, you do that through stories. And so, you know, that's kind of the heart of science communication stuff, you know, is filling that gap between like, here's the data and how do we make this into a story that people will take and then care about and then maybe act on because they care and stuff. So yeah, that kind of work, writing stories, is super important. So yeah, I mean, previous extinction events, is there a particular one? Is it the dinosaur extinction event that stands out to you the most, or are there any others?
Oh man, that is a big question, because every mass extinction, I think, is a pivotal part in natural history. For example, the first one, I would consider the Silurian, which happened about, I believe, 400 to 450 million years ago, which was before even like vertebrates really evolved. I consider that almost like a prologue as to what we can expect mass extinctions to look like. And then from then on, the Devonian, which was around the time that Earth was becoming more tropical, plants were coming onto land, and there were lots of, like, biodiversity was exploding in the oceans. But one that sticks out to me the most is one that happened about 250 million years ago, wherein a series of colossal volcanic eruptions sustained over a long time ended the age, a time period called the Permian, just before the age of the dinosaurs started. And it's the greatest extinction in the history of life on Earth, bar the current one. But the thing is, and I talk about this a little bit in Primordial, as I was writing the scene, I got this feeling of almost anxiety and dread, because I could see the pattern of, it was almost verbatim what's happening now, with a warming climate making weather and natural elements or natural forces more extreme, and the planet overall less hospitable, with more deserts,
horrendous, like there were gigantic hurricanes of acid that towered into the heavens. And at the same time, entire landscapes were turned into lush forests and swamps into deltas of fire. So I was just like, this is basically what's happening now. So I pull a lot from that mass extinction, even more than the one from the dinosaurs, because the dinosaurs was like, almost in a way, it's a bit more nuanced, but in a way you could think of it as a one-shot kill. The Permian was a drawn-out mass extinction of the Earth being choked and suffocated and burned, very much so like what's going on now.
Well said. It is a nerve-wracking thing, especially when you consider like the rates. Like,
yes,
like with that one, like the rates of change were slower than the rates of change now.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I think that one, the entire Permian extinction lasted, it was a period of time longer than all of human history combined.
Yeah.
And in fact, when just this summer, when I had the privilege to go to the Field Museum in Chicago, there was a sign that when I saw it, I was almost like paralyzed for a second with how scary it was. And it was this clock that they had set up, and it had number of species that have gone extinct since 8 a.m. this morning. At the time that I took a picture, it was 12:35 p.m. 18 had already gone extinct by then.
Oh, geez.
And the normal rate of extinction is one species every 4 years. Today, species are going extinct at a rate of 30,000 per year, and 82 species every day, and 4 species every hour.
God. That,
like that?
Wow.
That's terrifying.
That is. Holy smokes. Yeah, especially I think sometimes, you know, talking to people about like, you know, hey, what's your favorite animal? And they tend to mention the same kind of handful of animals. And then you start looking at like, what are their numbers looking like and stuff?
Oh,
geez. I remember a student before brought up orangutans, and I had just interviewed orangutan conservationist. And that person had said that if we had continued, if we didn't do more to slow things like the deforestation and stuff, that we would likely see the extinction of wild orangutans by like 2080. And I was just like, it was like a gut punch. I'm like, oh my God. Man. And like, that's a charismatic species that people care about. Like, the, you know, there's so many that just go under the radar. I didn't realize it was that many. So I'm kind of happy you brought that to my attention, because that's.
Yeah. Like, I mean, my personal favorite animal, it's the elephant, for two reasons. One, they remind me a lot of dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And B, they are some of the most supremely intelligent animals on the planet. And I'm pretty sure I made an Instagram post like around the time of my birthday, because we went to Universal and they have a statue of the Lorax there. Mm-hmm. And so I put up a post, and then one of the little statistics that I have here is that almost like 200 years ago, there were 20 million African bush elephants all across the African continent, but there's only about like 415,000 left today.
Wow. Wow. That's rough. That is. How do you, this is a tough question. I know it's a tough question. It's a question that I really can't even answer myself, but it's always good to hear other people's thoughts and perspectives. How do you, maybe as you can answer however you would like, as yourself, or how do you think that we as people in a society, how do you think that we emotionally process the idea that we are living in the sixth mass extinction and are really causing the extinction itself to happen in the first place?
The thing is, I mean, me personally, obviously I have like the same kind of like living needs as any other person, like lights, a roof, a house. So like a lot of things, they're sort of non-negotiable. And unfortunately, there is a certain amount of land required to sustain the human species. However, as a species, I think the reason the sixth mass extinction is so deadly is because it's a huge interconnected web. For example, deforesting the Congo, obviously bad, but why is it? because we're also mining for the minerals that we get to make our phones. So, and obviously our phones are one of the most important things to us right now. So there are so many things to worry about to a point, I think we almost get numb to it, that it's like,
shoot, man, there's just so much to do. And I've heard, like, I would almost consider it horror stories of marine biologists who left their jobs because they saw the destruction and they were so saddened by it that they were just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a difficult kind of thing to take on.
Good question, too. About.
Yeah. I mean, I got my phone here and, you know, I use it to try and educate about science and nature and conservation and that kind of thing. But, you know, I also have to acknowledge and accept that, like, I'm a cog in the machine too, right? Like, I'm also part of that. So it's a big balancing act. You know, how do you navigate an interconnected world while trying your best to have the smallest negative impact and the greatest positive impact, but acknowledging that you are going to have an impact no matter what? That's tricky.
That's it right there.
Yeah. One of my favorite examples of, like, interconnection, not to go off on too much of a tangent, is like the Sahara Amazon.
Isn't that from, geez, there was a Netflix documentary about him, trying to
remember. There was a
Our Living World.
I think on there, how, like, the Saharan dust, specifically from, like, the Beaudelaire Depression, will fly across the Atlantic, and it helps provide the phosphorus that the rainforest is missing. Because it rains so much that it leaches all the nutrients out of the soil, and those nutrients that it does leach out get washed out into the ocean, which feed the phytoplankton that provide the air that we breathe. And it's like, oh my, like, wow. You know, like, that's
just, I remember,
that's just
insane. I remember my uncle showed me that, like, about, it was a National Geographic article about, like, it had a crazy title, like, Saharan sand flies all the way to the Amazon. And I was like, dude, that's not real. That is, like, not real. But, like, now I realize, wow.
Yeah.
It is insane. Like, our planet is a interconnected, like, I don't want to go off on too much of, like, a fantasy tangent, but if you've ever seen Avatar.
Yeah.
Everything is connected in a way. We, not even living things, even non-living things, all working together in ways we can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. Like, it would crush the human mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm trying. I just started. You were a bit of an inspiration, actually, to actually sit down and do it, was to finally start writing a book. And that's kind of the gist of the book that I'm starting, is, like, all of these interconnections that, like, we just take for granted and that we don't even see or imagine, and that are just so beyond, like, our perception, you know, that like, if we just took a moment to slow down and, like, appreciate them, we'd be like, oh, holy smokes.
Dude, that means a lot. Thank you. Like,
yeah, honestly, like, just seeing your updates and things and your ambition about it and stuff was like, oh, you know, I can do this. I should just sit down. I've been talking about it for years. I should just sit down and start doing it. And so I've started writing an outline and that sort of thing.
That's brilliant.
We'll see where it goes.
Like, cause a lot of people always tell me, like, oh man, I wish I could write a book. I can't even write an essay. Like, yes, you can. You just got to make it about something that you love. You like cars, write about cars. You like nature, write about nature. You're obsessed with dinosaurs, write about dinosaurs. Like, whatever. Just do what you love and then
see where it takes you.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah. So on the note of something that I think everybody loves at least at some point in their life, if not their entire lives, dinosaurs, right? Dinosaurs. I mean, the Jurassic Park franchise,
yes, you know,
continues to take in millions and millions of dollars, the toys, all of it. What is it about dinosaurs that you think, you know, there's, for example, you mentioned the other mass extinctions, and there's that wonderfully mind-numbing number that 99% of every animal that has ever existed has gone extinct. There's been so many things outside of dinosaurs. What is it about dinosaurs that you think continues to just captivate us?
I just want to quickly add to that tagline. That is literally the tagline for Primordial, that 99% of all species are extinct. Bear witness to their story and ours. That is literally the tagline on the back of the book.
Yeah.
But one is because they're just neat looking animals. Mm-hmm. They have huge horns. They have gigantic faces. They have crests. They could make weird sounds with those crests in the case of hadrosaurs, mm-hmm. the duck-billed dinosaurs. They had enormous tails. They had clubs and spikes on the end of those tails. They're weird looking, and that's cool. But then when you see, obviously, when you look at the skeleton of something like an elephant, a tiger, a whale, but then you look at something of a dinosaur, like you realize the space in the ribcage of a sauropod, like the long-necked dinosaurs, or the immense amount of bulk that powered the skull of Tyrannosaurus Rex, or like the speed and agility that must have gone into the raptor or dromaeosaur dinosaurs. We almost see them as like super animals, and like we almost see them as like biological badasses in a way. And then that's the second level. Although a third level, I would say, is that we love the idea of fantasy landscapes, like Narnia or the world of How to Train Your Dragon.
Yes.
And when we think of dinosaurs, we see like an unspoiled, untouched ecosystem, like a whole world. But when you think of animals like elephants and tigers and whales, you see their world is rapidly like disappearing. So we almost get like a little bit of leave from that guilt when we think about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Or other prehistoric animals in general.
Yeah. You know, that makes so much sense. And I have never heard a single person articulate that, you know, that we do have this kind of like this like super interest in like this attraction to like these time periods where there's like no human impact, you know, like looking at a world where like we weren't a part of it, and it's like this, it's like this magical place and stuff, but it was real. And so,
yes,
you know, it's not like it's just dragons and fantasy, but it's something that was there that we didn't experience and we weren't a part of and we didn't affect. And like that, you're so right. It's like watching movies. You know, it's like you're like, oh, no, I'm not impacting this. I'm not a part of this. We didn't wipe them out. It was, you know, something else.
Yeah.
It's a bit different.
Like, I think even mass extinctions, horrific as they are, like when you hear about them, like, oh, gigantic volcanic eruptions caused like hyper acidic hurricanes, or an asteroid the size of Mount Everest slammed into the earth with releasing an explosion, like, I believe the latest number is like 10 billion times more powerful than a Hiroshima bomb.
Yeah.
So it's like, to the point that the annihilation of these worlds, it almost counts as entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like when you watch War of the Worlds, you're not, that's actually a bit of not a good example. Independence Day. When you're watching Independence Day, you're not like, oh God, that's tragic. Unless the movie wants you to think that. You're like, dang, that is a cool explosion. So it's almost a bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any dinosaurs or even other extinct animals that you think are underappreciated and like their stories that you're really excited to tell?
Man, that is my bread and butter. There's a group of animals that live around the dawn of the age of the dinosaurs called Draponosaurs. They're a kind of reptile. In fact, one was a new species, Mirasauro, was discovered only a few days ago, and it has this beautiful set of feather-like quills on the back, almost like a sail. But of course, other species like Draponosaurus itself, they look like a cross between an anteater, an anole lizard, and then a bird, because they have this weird beak and they have a claw at the end of their tail, and we don't know what that claw was used for. They are super weird animals. And although another dinosaur in specific, I mean, probably, and that is a tough question, Jesus, early members of the tyrant lineage, i.e. like the group that gave rise to Tyrannosaurus, members like Conculu, which again, also recently discovered, but also Moros Intrepidus, what's another one, or Alioramus, like, or Tarbosaurus, like, showing how dinosaurs are not like just rock stars of deep time. I mean, they are, but I think also just showing them as animals and animals that have an origin story and an origin story before that. And then one before that, like showing basically just because Primordial's original species count was over 1,000. obviously I was never going to make that, but I was just like, there is just so much cool stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, not a name dropper again, but the one you mentioned, the one with like the feather like sail on its back, that was my friend Tiffany was a co-author on that paper. That was one of them.
So cool.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh.
That artist I fought, the artist that did the beautiful image for that paper, I think his name is Gabriel Lucueto. I follow him on Instagram, but also I saw his art at the exhibit at the Frost Science Museum about like the evolution of horses. And it was really cool. It was like, oh my God, he's right there or something. Yeah. But I don't know.
See, just another example of how interconnected the world is, right?
Yes.
Oh, jeez. God. What media? I've seen on your account, like you read a lot and you post about a lot of different books and things, which is awesome. That's extraordinary. I mean, are there specific books or movies or games that have shaped your love for this stuff?
I'm going to try to not say the Jurassic Park movies, because that would be the first thing I would say, but also the Avatar films, the way that Pandora is such an alien world is a huge inspiration. Which, by the way, the trailer for the new one came out like a few minutes before this.
Oh, it did? Okay, I'm going to watch that in a bit.
It is 0-60 in 2 seconds. But then also books like Otherlands by the paleontologist Thomas Halliday. Mm-hmm. That book is really special because I got that on a trip to San Francisco. And my dad, who, by the way, the single most supportive person throughout this journey, like to the point that I genuinely don't even know what I'd be doing without him. And he is honestly my hero, but he got me that book. And the way that book works is that it tells short stories throughout Earth's geological eras featuring animals. And that's literally just what Primordial is, although Primordial is a little bit more fun based and like keeping it brief. But that book, and then also Primitive War, the book by Ethan Perez, and then also the upcoming movie, which is sort of like a horror Vietnam War with dinosaurs. It is insane, but it's also so cool. And then just other movies that don't even have to be related to animals or dinosaurs, like Sinners. There's a scene in the movie that features a lot of music and a lot of spirituality, and it's so cool. And then I want to get one more in. How to Train Your Dragon, which like is basically my childhood, arguably more than the Jurassic Park movies.
Those are all good picks. Otherlands is one that I've been wanting to read. I swear I probably have, because I frequently will like take pictures of books that I plan on getting. And I was scrolling through recently, and like there's certain books that I have on there like 4 or 5 times where I like see it and go, ooh, and I'll take a picture. And then I'll see it maybe like 3 months later and go, ooh, and I'll take a picture. And Otherlands was one of them. I had like 3 or 4. And I'm like, I just need to read it. I just need to get to it. Just sit down, read it. Because I've heard multiple people give it rave reviews. So
it's beautifully well-crafted. Admittedly, as someone who likes more fun-based stuff or brevity, it feels like a bit of a mission to get through it at one point or another. But overall, it is wonderfully well made and just shows how beautiful individual moments in deep time are.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm gonna have to check that out. Are there any portrayals of dinosaurs in the media that you think have especially nailed it, or any that have just kind of completely missed the mark?
I feel a little bit guilty for saying this, but ironically, the new Jurassic World, something I love a lot, for example, about films like Primitive War or the documentary Prehistoric Planet, is that they shoot for paleo accuracy, like making the animals look like animals.
Yeah.
But in Rebirth, they look a little bit more monstrous, which is a good thing. They look stylistically beautiful, but it's something that I think nailed it, like I said. Prehistoric Planet, and just seeing these animals being so vibrant and beautiful and truly like something you could see and that's tactile. I think that is probably one of the most spot on depictions of prehistoric life, period.
Yeah. Yeah. Prehistoric Planet was a great series. It's one that I like frequently, like when we're having downtime in my classroom or something, we'll just turn on Prehistoric Planet. It's requested so regularly. People will be like, wait,
can we
another
way.
Episode of that? And you know, it's one where I always have to go, okay, is this a day where like we can afford it if, you know, maybe some of the people who are supposed to be working on something actually just kind of tune out and are watching this instead? Yeah, okay, it's fine, you know, and we'll just kind of geek out together and stuff. So yeah,
that is,
it's a good one.
That is, I mean, I know, and it wasn't in my biology class, but freshman year, my friend sent me a picture of the Austroraptor, like a fishing raptor dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And he was like, dude, look what you're playing in class. And I was just like, lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. I teach wildlife, so I can get away with a little more flexibility in that area for documentaries and things too. So, yeah. So, I mean, you've already touched on it quite a bit, but I just, opportunity to say kind of all at once, you know, you're writing for my primordial. What are you doing to try, what are you doing? How do I phrase this? How are you trying to do things differently with Primordial? What is it that you're doing with the tone or how you're writing it, putting it together that you're trying to make it different, stand out?
I mean, I mostly just try to make it fun. Like the story comes first, and then kind of like in the Planet Earth series or Prehistoric Planet or really most nature documentaries, it is in the moments that it would matter or where the audience would be like, wait, what? That's where I would plonk in like little tangents of information about like, how this order of carnivorous mammals, the creodonts, is different from the ones that are alive now, the carnivorans. Or sometimes I just sneak in little bits of like poetry. I want to see if I can pull it up because this would be so fun. Like the prologue starts like this. I'll just read a little paragraph if that's all right.
Totally.
Think of the wonder of life. Think of the strength of the rhino, the grace of the antelope, the speed of the cheetah, and the cleverness of the meerkat. Think of the wading marabou storks, the lumbering elephants, the fluttering flamingos, and the leaping gazelles. Think of the wandering giraffes, the marching ants, the galloping zebras, the scampering gayfowl, and the ferocious lion. As of right now, we recognize almost 10 million eukaryotic species all around the world. This includes all the troops of monkeys, the herds of hippos, the clumps of mushrooms, the packs of wolves, the swathes of mangroves, the flocks of shorebirds, the fields of flowers, the hives of bees, and the colonies of seals.
That's fantastic. That's very
well. Thank you.
Yeah, very descriptive. What's your creative process like behind your book?
Most of them are just sort of spontaneous, like, oh, that'd be a cool book. Mm-hmm. And then I'll jot like an idea down, and like 90% of what I write never comes to fruition. But I will say, I don't want to give anything away now, but for anyone who's listening, something good is coming. All in good time. All in good time.
Good.
But it was mostly just like, how can I make this the best thing possible? Like Primordial could have easily have just been like a little pamphlet thing, but I was like, I want to make this big. So it's like throwing storytelling, throwing poetry, throwing crazy detailed but also simple facts, throwing stuff about conservation, just like make this the best. I want to make something that I would have loved to have when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Like something that could teach easily, but also be insanely fun, because books like Raptor Red, Otherlands, Elephant Dawn, all of those were like books that I would read obsessively and Dinosaurs of the Flaming Cliffs were books that I would read a lot in 6th to 8th grade, especially since those were like kind of rocky times for me socially. And I was just like, they were really just like a strong thing that I could hold on to. So I want to make something for the people that feel lost, basically.
That's perfect. I mean, what better reason to do something, you know? I mean, that's kind of why I do a lot of what I do too, is, you know, things that either I missed that like, you know, used to be in media when I was younger, but aren't really anymore, or it's changed or something, or things that like I wish that I had had. You know, thinking about being the kid who loved all the geeky stuff, you know, the animals and stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's, it's a good reason. It's a noble, respectful, you know, reason for doing something. Are you doing any illustrations or anything like that with it? Like personally, are you going to collaborate with anybody?
I've been thinking of art of certain like paleo artists mm-hmm. that I would want to collaborate with. I mean, currently, thankfully, my mom, who is an amazingly helpful and beautiful person, has decided to call up one of her artist friends and see like, oi, can you do something like this? And so I'm kind of in the process of that, but I do have a hand-drawn illustration where it's the skull of a dinosaur called Lociceratops against a black backdrop. But inside the skull is an image of like a cave wall covered in human handprints, showing like the main idea is that we are connected, but obviously like Lociceratops and humans never interacted. But like, I don't know, I just also want to make it cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. What do you hope? I mean, I know you're not done yet, but when you are, you've got a vision, you've got a mission. What do you hope people walk away from the book thinking or feeling?
I think one of the best ways to describe this would be kind of the way I remember feeling after watching Jurassic World Dominion back in summer seventh grade, just being like, this is amazing. Like, it was obviously the movie is like, if my opinion has changed on the movie, but I still remember how I felt watching it. And I was like, this is beautiful. And I want people to have this appreciation and have almost like a, whoa, I am living on the same planet as all of this. Because there was a deleted scene where the ending would actually be a bunch of kids just playing Super Smash Bros. At night in New York City. But it would just be a way to wrap up and just say, yeah, that's the same planet as like the dinosaurs and all the stuff from before. And I wanted the audience to have this like, I'm living on the same planet and all of that could go to waste, and have this like, I want the audience to have this urgency of like, we need to protect this. We are on the front lines of extinction, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think that touches on kind of what my next question was going to be, but you know, why do you think that a story like this matters right now in this moment?
I think especially we get very caught up as people of like, oh, what's going on in this area or that area, but it's like, back up, we're missing a bigger picture, and we tend to focus on ourselves to such a minute degree that we block out the world around us to an extent that to the point that it almost doesn't exist, and that is harmful, I think. And the thing is, there is a solution to be had that can fix like a huge majority of the problems we face now, but it would just require us to see what we have in common, the history that we and all life on Earth shares, and to see what we have in common as people, as Homo sapiens, the only species in the history of life on Earth that we know of that has been able to achieve something of this scale, to not no longer be a part of nature, but apart from it, like away from. And obviously it's something that is worth celebrating. Like, humans are amazing beings, but when you put them, if we could make ourselves the champions of biological life and have us be the ones that stop the sixth mass extinction, I think that would be probably one of the magnum opuses of the human species and of all life on Earth. And in the end, who doesn't want that? Like, who doesn't want a better future for their kids and like for generations after? Sorry, that was a bit like tangential.
No, trying to string that together. That was absolutely perfect, because you kind of even answered the last question that I really had with that. And which was, you know, like, what does survival mean? And I think for a lot of different people, when you talk about survival, and you can kind of tell a lot about a person's current state or their view of the world, whatever, based off of their answer to that. And for some people, it's like making it to the next day, you know?
Yeah.
For some people, it's, you know, as long as humans survive, then we're good, you know?
And yeah.
For others, it's like, no, it's survival isn't just living to see the next day. It's what you do with that life and that experience and that potential. And you really hit the nail on the head. Like, you know, I there's a book that I read. Oh, what was it called? I can't remember what it was called, but there is a line in the book from a climate scientist, which was a little scary of a line, but he essentially said, if we're going to be the last of our species, not that we are, right? But if we were, if we're going to be the last of our species, then why not be the best? And I was like, oh my God, what a simple, you know, moral framework to move forward with in life. Is just, if we're going to be the last, why not be the best? You know, don't just make it to the next day. Do everything that we, you know, live up to our fullest potential as a species. And
damn, that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, gosh, that line hits hard. I mean, if you want, you could switch this out in post. It's like, instead of me going on that long tangent, you could put this instead, or I don't know. 99.9% of all species that have ever lived on Earth are extinct. And 99% of that is completely wiped from the geological record. So survival is a long shot, but we have the means of making it so that we have a peaceful reign over our world and life on it. But maybe, if you want to push it, maybe even other worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, I can't remember the exact phrasing of the line. I remember I was sitting next to my oldest son watching the Jurassic Park movie, and the more recent one.
Rebirth.
Yeah. And the Dr. Henry Loomis character says something about the 99% number. Oh, and then my kid looked over and he goes, that's just you. Like,
my friend, I was in earlier in the summer, I had the honor and privilege to go out to Alberta, Canada, and to places like Dinosaur Provincial Park. And I got the honor of speaking to Dr. Phil Curry and then also Dr. Caleb Brown, the creator of the Royal Sorrel Museum. And actually, while I was there, my friend sent me a text like, dude, have you seen Rebirth? There's a character that is just a copy paste of you. Like, the whole time I was just like, this guy's just GP as an adult. And I was just like, yeah. And then after I saw the movie, I'm like, yeah, I think I even made it like a post about it, like Dr. Henry Loomis Core or something.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I thinking about like my younger self and just being a kid, if as a kid, I knew that someday that somebody would say that one of the paleontologists in Jurassic Park and me were like the same energy, I would have been so excited as a kid. I would have been like, yes. Are you kidding me? Like, really? That's what I grow up to be like? That's amazing. So, I mean, hey, it's a compliment for sure. And I'll just say, I mean, from what I've seen of your work and what you've accomplished so far, I have no doubts in my mind that you are going to be able to achieve those goals, and that's, you know, what you set out for, you're going to get it.
Man, that means a ton. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I genuinely really appreciate it. And
of course, thank you.
I just want to thank JP again for joining me on the show. It was an absolute pleasure. And of course, as updates continue to come out around his book, I will be sharing them as well. And then when that eventually comes out, you best believe I will be reading that ASAP. If you would like to support the show, the work that I'm doing with the wildlife, Field Guide of Wonder, the video series that I do on social media, you can do that at patreon.com/thewildlife for as little as $1 per month, or something like 1 cent per piece of content that I post, because I post way too much. And until next time, I hope you get a chance to just nerd out. Peace out, Rainbow Trouts.